Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. This episode originally aired on June 6th, 2019. As a refresher, we'll play the original episode with an update at the end. If you remember this story well, you can fast forward to around the 1 hour and 3 minute mark where the update begins.
He's an amazing man. He's got a big heart, and he was good at his job because of the person he is. And I miss him.
Denise got the call from Pretty the next day at 2:30 in the afternoon that Eric had walked off and hadn't come back. So after we got the call, we immediately tried to get a hold of Eric, and we couldn't. He wouldn't. There was no answer. At that time, the phone would ring through. Then it would go to his voicemail. His phone didn't stop taking calls till 5:30. Then it stopped. So Eric left the condo with no shoes, only his wallet and his cell phone.
By all indications from all reports, it appears that Mr. Pratt walked away. An able-bodied adult with his wits about him, and just disappeared.
On July 22, 2016, 25-year-old paramedic Eric Procht and his fiancée had a small get-together at their condo in Lakewood, Colorado, a suburb of Denver. As the party was winding down and most of the guests had left, a disagreement between the pair and two people close to them turned into more of an argument. And according to those present, Eric took a walk to cool off. But Eric never returned. Despite extensive searches, no trace of Eric has ever been found. Eric's disappearance is a baffling mystery with bizarre clues, but they just haven't found enough pieces of the puzzle to solve it. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 178 of The Vanished, Eric Procht's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. For Eric's story, we were contacted by Eric's parents, Randy and Denise. They feel that someone must know something about what happened to their son. That Eric couldn't have just vanished into thin air. We spoke to the Lakewood Police Department and also attempted to reach Eric's fiancée for an interview. However, we were not able to come to agreeable terms with either her or her representative. We were granted access to Eric's missing persons file, so what we do have is her statements to police. Before I go into the events of the night Eric disappeared, it's important to go over where he was in life and give some context to the events that happened that evening. Eric was a paramedic. He was dedicated to a job which he loved. But he did have some stressors surrounding it. He had recently been struggling with some death scenes he had responded to. Eric's father, Randy, told us more about his son.
Eric was a good kid. He was kind of my little mini-me. He's that kid who, when your parents give you that curse, that's have one just like you. He was that kid for me. So we had a pretty special bond. He was a good kid growing up. We did a lot of stuff together as a family. We were always pretty tight. Even as he was growing up into high school and stuff, we always stayed tight. We always went and did stuff together. Him and I paddled kayaks together. But him and his mom also had a great relationship. Just as a family, we always have.
We had a trampoline in the backyard, and he entertained the neighbors who have a deck that kind of overlooks our backyard. And so they'd sit out there, and he would go out and just bounce on that thing for hours. And then he was big into the video games and just a normal kid. We got him into kayaking. He was probably about, I think, 10, 11 years old. We got him a boat, and so he was my shadow going to do that. And so just real easygoing kid. He worked for Kentucky Fried Chicken for a little while, but that was during high school. So after that, he went to the barbecue place, and he was like an assistant manager when he left there. And my wife, one of her customers, she was at that time working at a chiropractic. And so one of the clients came in and was talking about how her son went through this EMT program and told him that, you know, he didn't really know what he wanted to do, whether he wanted to go to college or not. So it sounded like Eric.
After speaking with that client, Eric's mom, Denise, thought this was something he might enjoy. And she was right. Eric went and did some medical training and became a paramedic.
Through high school, Eric wasn't sure what he was going to do after. He just knew he didn't want to go to college. He didn't want to go to more schooling. And so she came home with him one day and told him the story and said, it's something if you'd be interested in to help other people, and which Eric loved doing, this would be a good fit for you. You know, just think about it. And so it did actually interest Eric. And so we got him signed up. He was really interested in doing more of the paramedic stuff. Here in Colorado, a lot of the paramedics are attached to fire departments. And so you have to have the fire training also. Eric wasn't interested in being a fireman. Nothing against the fireman. He just didn't want to deal with that part of it. He just wanted to do the medical part. He really liked to do the 911 calls, which is really what he was interested in. He wanted to get more in depth into that. And after talking to his bosses and people at St. Anthony's, where he took his training, he actually was starting to do some training outside of the paramedics, which he was starting to teach some classes. He was a paramedic up in South Park, which is up in near Fair Play, Colorado. They would do 48-hour shifts. So from his townhouse in Lakewood, he would go up there, then spend the 2 days on his shift, and then he would come back down. Well, his boss up there, they thought so much of him and his skills that they started up a new program, and it was to work with the community, teach some classes like CPR and first aid type classes. And he was really happy with the way Eric started doing it and just really took off. And he really enjoyed doing that. That was one of the things he really liked. And he was also doing some of those classes through St. Anthony down here in the Lakewood area. He had talked to one of the trainers from St. Anthony's that he had, and they brought up if he would be interested in doing some classes down here. And so he was almost starting to do some classes there also.
Several months prior to his disappearance, Eric and his then-girlfriend Preeti got a condo together. The following month, he proposed to Preeti. Eric's dad, Randy, told us how Eric and Preeti met.
He met Preeti during the EMT class when he first went through it. About 2 years later, she contacted him through Facebook, and so they got together, and that's how they met, was through the EMT school. She got her license, but she never practiced the EMT.
They went for coffee, and eventually their relationship blossomed into an engagement. They had just purchased that condo where they had the party, and by all accounts, they were happy. Just prior to Eric's disappearance, he had been on a couple of tough calls. He discussed with people close to him that he had struggled dealing with some of the scenes that he had come across.
You know, with all the first responder stuff, he did have some pretty difficult responses and some calls that he went out on. One of them was a call that was actually on his birthday, which was a month before he went missing, which was a little 12-year-old boy hung himself, and Eric was the one that responded to that with his crew. And so he had a little hard time with that one. It stuck with him.
At the time, Eric was still trying to come to terms with that scene he had responded to. He had spoken to Preeti about it, and he had also spoken to both friends and family about the nature of some of the scenes involved in his work. According to the police report, Eric had confided in his friend Caleb, who was also a coworker. He told Caleb that he was particularly upset with the number of recent calls involving children. Caleb wasn't sure if Eric had sought professional help, but assured police that Eric had not spoken about self-harm or suicide. Shortly before Eric disappeared, he talked to his dad about how he was feeling.
Eric and I went paddling the day before he went missing. We went kayaking, and so we talked a little bit about that. Seemed to be doing okay with it, but you could tell it still bugged him a little bit. When we later talked to his boss, Paul, up in South Park, he said that they actually do a debriefing after these kind of calls just to make sure everybody's doing okay. If they need extra help, they could bring in someone to talk to him, but Eric said that he didn't need it. Paul said that Eric was always upbeat there, that he was kind of the guy that brought humor to them, and that they kind of fed off of him, and that was the kind of kid that he was.
On Friday night, July 22nd, 2016, Eric and his fiancée Preeti decided to have a small party at their condo. Eric had been working part-time for two different ambulance companies, but he had just gotten a full-time assignment and they wanted to celebrate. Preeti's sister Priyanka and a friend of Eric's from work, Caleb, had met at a previous housewarming party for Eric and Preeti. They thought the pair had a spark at that earlier meeting, and it was a good excuse for them to get to know each other better. Eric came home from work around 8:30 p.m. There were about 10 people at their home until around 11 p.m. or so, when everyone left except for four of them. The remaining four were Eric, Preeti, Preeti's sister Priyanka, and Eric's friend Caleb. They were drinking and chatting, talking about current events and politics. The conversation turned to recent police shootings. Eric was a paramedic and had strong views on the subject. The conversation became a debate, and soon Priyanka and Caleb separated themselves from the couple and began tidying up as Preeti and Eric argued in the kitchen.
Somewhere around midnight to 1 o'clock, Eric, Preeti, Priyanka, and Caleb. At that time, this was 2016, and the hot topic then was Black Lives Matter. And so they got into a discussion about that, and I guess it got a little bit heated. The argument kept on. It was pretty much Caleb and Eric had kind of the same opinion, and Priyanka and Preeti kind of sided together. That's where the argument headed. And so Eric and Preeti were still arguing. They went down. Eric grabbed the trash and was going downstairs. Their condo is on the second floor. They went down to the first floor to dump the trash. Eric grabbed it on the way out. Preeti followed him down there. And I guess they argued for another 15, 20 minutes. Eric wanted to know why she didn't have his back. He said, I needed to walk around the block and just cool off a little bit. I'll be back. Preeti went back up to the condo, and so Caleb and Priyanka noticed that Eric wasn't with them, so they asked, where's Eric? She told him that he just needed to cool off and to walk around the block. So Eric left the condo with no shoes, only his wallet and his cell phone.
Eric was emotional when he walked away from the condo. He was wearing tan shorts and a blue shirt, and as Randy mentioned, no shoes. He was not seeing a doctor for any known conditions, nor was he known to use drugs of any kind, neither prescribed or otherwise. When Preeti went back upstairs, the others asked where Eric was, and she explained that he wanted to cool off and take a walk around the block. Preeti and her sister then had an argument. When Eric wasn't back after about 20 minutes had gone by, they decided they should go out and look for him.
Priyanka and Caleb went to search the neighborhood. At that time, Preeti stayed at the apartment just in case he came back because he didn't have keys to the condo. He didn't leave with his keys.
Between the three of them, they say they searched until about 3 a.m., and Caleb got in his car and drove around. But Eric was nowhere to be found, and he wasn't answering his phone. Priyanka and Caleb eventually left, and in the morning, Preeti spoke to Caleb again, and another friend. But Eric still wasn't back. According to the report, she didn't want to panic his parents, and she thought he must be somewhere sleeping it off. Caleb also began calling around to friends and coworkers, but no one had seen him. By the afternoon, Preeti was really worried and decided it was time to reach out to Eric's parents. Here's Eric's mom, Denise.
I had texted, actually, both of them with a picture of a little table I was getting rid of. And it was to Eric and Preeti, and I said, hey, would you guys like this table? And that was at noon. And I never heard back. So at 2:30, I get a call from Preeti, and this is how the call went. So I picked it up, and I'm like, hey. And she goes, hey. And I go, what's going on? Well, we had a party last night, and we got into our discussion about Black Lives Matter. And then Eric and I went to take the trash out, and we argued a little bit more. And so he took a walk to cool off. And I'm like, and he didn't come home? And she said, no, he didn't come home. But she didn't ask if he was at our house. I mean, we're a very, very close family. If Eric needs anything, he knows he can call any of us and we're there. But she didn't ask that. She didn't ask if he was there. She had to make the phone call finally that, you know, he didn't come back. We started calling hospitals. We called Lakewood right away. We called surrounding because we thought, you know, well, to be honest, I thought at first maybe he's in a detox. You know, she said he was drunk and he walked off. So maybe he got picked up. And so that's why we started calling jails and detox centers, even hospitals and nothing. And then that's when our older son and our daughter-in-law and us headed down there on that Saturday evening. I don't think a daily drinker. I think when he drank a good amount. He had, you know, like Randy said, he did have a lot of tough calls and that. And we did notice a little bit of a pattern of him drinking a little bit more.
After we got the call, we immediately tried to get a hold of Eric and we couldn't, there was no answer. At that time, the phone would ring through. Then it would go to his voicemail. His phone didn't stop taking calls till 5:30. Then it stopped ringing through. It would go immediately to his voicemail. So we immediately packed up, went down there to start searching. But before we did, we called Lakewood Police Department and made a missing persons report. Then we started the search process. We went around the neighborhood, quite a few different areas.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. By that evening, there had still been no sign of Eric. Together, Preeti and Denise called local hospitals as well as the Jefferson County Jail. There was a chance that he was picked up off the street and taken in, or injured and taken to an emergency room. And that's when they decided to call the police department and file a missing persons report. An officer went out to Eric and Preeti's home, where they met with Preeti and Denise.
Later that night, Lakewood showed up at about 6:30. They sent a patrolman to take a report. He did take a report, and we didn't hear back from Lakewood Police until Monday at around 1 o'clock, 12 o'clock.
According to the police report, Preeti contacted Verizon Wireless to see if they could give her any information about Eric's cell phone. Verizon confirmed that there had been a call made from the phone around 16 hours after the time he had walked off, at 5:19 p.m. the next day. Police then gained further information that this call was placed from the area of 1830 South Yank Court, about a mile from Eric's condo. When police arrived, the homeowner confirmed that he didn't know Eric and had never even seen him. He allowed the police to search the premises, including his camper trailer and backyard. There was no sign anyone had been there, but the police did notice a very steep ravine that was heavily wooded, overgrown with shrubs and extensive underbrush. They found game trails, but no sign of any fresh tracks or footprints. They canvassed that neighborhood, but no one recognized Eric. This phone call is a bizarre clue because it's never mentioned in the report what number was called. While I was putting this story together, I contacted Eric's mom, Denise, again to try to get more information about this call. She said that they've been just as confused about this because the FBI told them that the last call on Eric's phone was at 1:30 a.m., shortly after he walked off, and it was to check his voicemail. When Denise and Randy had gone to the condo after learning that Eric was missing, they were there when Preeti called Verizon and was told about calls after 1:30 a.m., with the last one being at 5:19 p.m. Why is there conflicting information about this? It's hard to say for certain, but we just don't have access to his cell phone records. Eric did own a number of firearms, and he was licensed to carry a weapon. He kept his guns locked up in a safe, and it was not believed at the time that he had any of his guns on him when he disappeared, and he was not known to carry a gun on a regular basis. We spoke with a representative from the Lakewood Police Department about their involvement in Eric's case.
So my name is John Romero. I'm the Public Information Officer for the Lakewood Police Department. So Lakewood is a suburb of Denver. We are just west of Denver. We are a fairly large city, I think the fifth biggest in the state, if I'm not mistaken. We have a big department, a little over like 250 sworn. So initially, we were made aware of Mr. Pratt's disappearance when a call came in from Mr. Pratt's mother and his fiance about 15 hours after he initially disappeared.
By the 25th, day 3, the Major Crimes Unit got involved and set up a command station at the local Lutheran church. 4 detectives canvassed the area around the condo, as well as the area around the house where the phone call had pinged, about a mile away. The canvas turned up no clues. The police report shows they knocked on the doors of 36 apartments across both locations. Of the 36, either no one had any information or they weren't home. The report states that detectives split 20 volunteers into 2 groups, but no searches of the area, including community spaces and garages, turned up any information.
We have done a number of things in this search for Eric. That includes we've used drones, we've used people mounted on horseback, several canine units, cadaver dogs, search and rescue. Initially, there was a very big push to find Eric, searches involving 60 to 70 people that were led by police.
Randy spoke about the search efforts to help locate his son.
They sent an officer, Tim Marquez, at the time to kind of organize everything and get it down. We had been searching straight through till that time. By Monday, we had close to between 75 and 100 searchers at that time. Eric was pretty well known. There's people from AMR, which was the ambulance service that he started as an EMT. They were phenomenal. They came in and kind of took charge before Lakewood had gotten there. His cousins helped kind of control that. Laura and Andrew were great. We had family, friends. Most days we had close to 100 searchers. We had Flight for Life. I actually did a flyover with infrared cameras, which is St. Anthony as part of their program. They were kind enough to do that. We had search and rescue dogs. We had first responders. We had Alpine Rescue. We did had drones. Area got pretty saturated. I think we had pretty good response with the searches. Talking with the police as this has gone on, we've had several meetings with them.
And it seems like when you read this report that they really did do a lot of stuff. But where were they during this search? They turned it over to us in a day and a half and didn't do the things. So, and I know these are normal feelings that people like us in our situation give, is right away everything seems like everything's happening and then everything goes away and it feels like you're on your own. And that's where we're at right now. And the only one searching is us. And there were so many things missed by them that, I mean, the cameras, they didn't go in right away to do cameras. By the time they did, all the cameras have been recorded over. So there was very few people. And I mean, we begged them from the start to do that. They brought dogs in and they brought dogs around the car. That's all they did. They walked around the car, they brought them up. And at that time, it was, we had a string of like 14 days in a row, 90 degree weather. And that did affect the dogs. But the only bloodhound that they brought out actually circled around and came back towards the condo. So
it's clear that Eric's family struggles with the way police handled this case. That because Eric was deemed a missing person who had walked off on his own accord, they may not have seen a reason to search the cameras at the condo. It's hard to make assumptions when you don't have all of the information. And when we can't speak with everyone involved, it makes it even more difficult. Randy and Denise have organized many searches of their own, too.
AMR still keep in contact with us. They've started up another Facebook so that they can text back and forth and talk amongst themselves. A lot of them are thinking maybe mine shafts in the area. And I don't know how to get a hold of a map of the area with mine shafts. The only mines that I've come across in the searches are, there's a clay mine close to it. There's a pond over there, and they did the dive team. We convinced them to go in. We had a lady with a FEMA dog got hit, and then the dog teams went in. And so they had 7 different dogs, I think it was, that had a reaction to this. And even after they went in and did the dive on the pond, that's it. And we've contacted Julie, who's the dog handler, and she is going to get one more shot this spring. We did talk to a private investigator who came in and said, you know, there's really not much I can do for you. He goes, but have you done this? Have you done that? And he saw the report on the pond. He goes, why didn't they drain that? He goes, they had all these searches. And he goes, and they didn't cover it all. So we contacted the owner, and he goes, you know, we want to bring the dogs back in one more time, give it a shot, and see if then we'll go forward with whatever we want to do. But he said, this is your last chance. So make it count, basically. And so we're waiting for the conditions to be right, and they're going to go in with the dogs again and see if they have the same reaction. If so, then we may move forward on trying to drain the pond. So.
You heard Randy mention that the dog that came out to the condo circled around and came back. The police report confirms that the dog headed west through the complex and up an embankment toward the road. The dog then headed north along the east side of the roadway. When the canine got to the northwest corner of the apartment building, it re-entered the complex. The track ended in that area. More volunteers searched drainage ditches, the baseball fields, and ravines to no avail. Preeti and Eric's families and friends also helped with the search, as well as searching on their own. With the help of the FBI, the police were able to retrieve further cell phone information. This was in two locations, one a few miles west of the condo, and another near Clement Park a few miles southeast, a completely different direction. Although canvassing both areas turned up nothing, it does indicate the possibility that Eric was walking around those areas, unless his cell phone had been stolen. After searching for 3 days, the official police search was called off. We also spoke to Eric's cousin Laura, and she told us more about the unique challenges of searching this terrain.
As far as the terrain that was around his condo, there was a big foothills that was like immediately across Alameda right behind their house. So very easy to get to. It isn't like mountainous terrain right where he's at. There's more foothills, open space, a lot of brush, a lot of ravines. As far as for somebody to disappear, I think it would probably be, you know, whether it be accidental, he got injured, we never found him in an area, or somebody disposed of things in the area. All of this is possible, right? So, you know, if even if it's as little as a cell phone, an article of clothing, that could easily be disposed of in this area and, you know, not be found for years, potentially, or ever.
Even though police stopped conducting physical searches, they still continued working the case. A man called the police department on the morning of the 25th, over 48 hours after Eric's last sighting. He had seen a man that he thought might have been Eric. He was driving on Alameda Parkway, which runs between Eric's condo and a large ravine, when he saw a man that he described as dirty, drunk, and/or disoriented on the parkway near the trailhead. He was barefoot and wearing a light blue or gray shirt and gray pants, an outfit somewhat similar to what Eric was wearing. He didn't think much about this until he heard about Eric's disappearance. That's when he called the Lakewood police. The one thing that didn't seem to add up was that he thought the man looked older, in his late 30s or early 40s. On the 27th, police contacted several local businesses to request video surveillance. All of the places they contacted either did not have any video available from that time, or Eric was not seen on the video footage that was provided. Eric's bank accounts had not been touched, and no sign of his clothing was ever found. Nearly a month had passed when Preeti called the police department with some new information. One of Eric's registered firearms was missing. According to the report, a couple of weeks prior, Eric's father Randy had retrieved the gun safe from Preeti and Eric's home. They had been unable to find the key. Randy contacted the manufacturer and arranged to have them send a replacement key. But by the time the spare key arrived, something strange is written in the report. It states that Preeti ironically located the spare key. The inference of this word is unknown.
One of Eric's firearms is missing a pistol. So there's always that chance that he took it with him
to harm himself. But if that happened, he walked away with no shoes, which is the story that we got from her. I don't think he would have gone that far. It's a pretty rugged area that he's in. They back up to probably 300 yards. You're on a trailhead to a pretty good sized foothill right there. There's a lot of gulches and drainage ditches in the area, which are pretty deep. A lot of vegetation in there at that time of the year. During the searches, like a string of like 10 days in a row where it was above 90 degrees. At first, we were pretty concerned that maybe he may have injured himself, and he enjoyed shooting. We did it as a family. We'd go together. So we had several firearms. The Christmas before, we had bought him a gun vault. He had all his firearms that we assumed were in the gun vault. We tried to get access to it and wanted to know if Pretty could find it. Comes with either a key or it's a padlock, an electronic lock on the front. She didn't know the combination, or she didn't know where the key was that would open it. In the interview Monday, no, actually it was Tuesday, the police set us down to interview us. I told them about the gun safe, and they wanted to know if they could drill it so that we could take an inventory and make sure all the firearms were there. They never followed through with that. So I took the gun vault home, told Pretty that I was going to try to get into it. I didn't want to ruin it. I ended up getting a hold of the manufacturer, and since Denise and I were the ones that bought it, we still had the receipt for it. So we had to prove that we had the receipt and send it to them, and they sent us a key. As soon as we got the key, then Pretty found the key, the original key, which was in a shoebox in the same closet just above it. We opened the case, we opened the vault and found that that was the only gun that was missing. When we were talking about what guns were out, Pretty told us about the pistol that was missing. Eric being away for 48 hours at a time, they wanted her to be safe. So they left this gun out for her, and it's in her bedroom, and it's in a little plastic case that it comes with. She brought it to us and said, oh, wait, this gun is missing. It usually is in this case. And so this was, he went missing Friday night. We didn't find out about the gun till Monday. So during this, one of the interviews that they did with Pretty, they actually asked her about it, and she gave them a full list of people in and out of the house during the first days of the search. Could it have been stolen? Yeah, but why would anybody gone into that? It was kept in the back bedroom. Either Eric left with it, or who knows what happened.
Eric's family has concerns over the Glock pistol. It's hard to say whether or not Eric had this gun on him when he left the house. It wasn't something he would normally do, have a gun on him while having a house party or going out for a walk. He was known to be a responsible gun owner. The report states that the last time it was used was Memorial Day weekend at the end of May, over a month before he disappeared, and Preedy had not seen the gun since. When they first moved to their new home back in February, he kept the gun in a safe, unless it was in a separate plastic case, for use if the need for self-defense arose while Eric was at work. When he would arrive home, he would place the gun back in the safe and lock it away. Preedy had stopped paying attention to the gun, as she got used to living in their new environment. And it was only after Eric disappeared that she realized one clip or magazine was missing. But with the gun safe locked, she assumed the gun itself was in the safe. When they finally got it opened, they realized the gun wasn't there. For this story, we also spoke to Eric's Aunt Michelle. She told us how she learned that Eric was missing.
He was a very kind, caring person. Well, when he disappeared, myself and my daughter were in Tennessee at the time. We had an extremely early flight Sunday morning, and we didn't know anything about what was going on Saturday. We were in a seminar all day. But we got to the airport probably about 4 a.m. And when we got to the airport, I was, you know, looking on Facebook as people do. And I saw all these posts from my nephew and a friend of Eric's going, give me a call. Where are you? Where are you? And I told my daughter, I'm like, oh no, something's up. But it was too early to call Colorado, so we waited till we landed. And when we landed, we found out he was missing, and we literally went from the airport and we went to the condo to go search. Those early days of searching, it was, you know, we all kind of felt, well, maybe he did walk off. Did he, you know, what happened?
Earlier, you heard Randy mention that pond, the one that several dogs had hit on. Michelle told us more information about the pond.
The one thing I did want to bring up that hasn't been mentioned is during the initial police search, they did call in an FBI agent to, hopefully my verbiage is right, to triangulate the cellular hit off the towers. He did the arcs and created this, you know, map of where it had the biggest ping. Right in a subdivision next to the condo, and I don't know how far that subdivision is, but it's not too far, there is a clay pond. And that is privately owned. It was never officially searched around the pond area. And months later, February of 17, we noticed this pond. And when we looked at the triangulation, the strongest hit from his cell phone was in a subdivision right next to this pond. And so we asked two different dog teams, cadaver dog teams, to go and check the pond out. These cadaver dog teams, out of, I think, 7 out of 8 dogs had a strong alert. One dog was so strong, he actually jumped into the pond and was biting at the water. Two of them, one jumped in and one was biting at the water. So the phone ping was in, they did a triangulation, and then they literally took an aerial map of the area and shaded out the strongest areas, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And the number one spot was in a subdivision called Solterra. And you can see by their triangulation and what they highlighted, it's like right up to that pond. So at least one of the dog teams I know, they're FEMA trained, and the dog handler is a civilian, but she is called out to the hurricanes, to the flood. She's been in 9/11 back in the day. These dogs are FEMA trained, so they know what they're doing, and they had this huge alert. So we got a hold of Lakewood, and it took them, this was in February, but it took Lakewood until August to search the pond. From what we initially heard after they searched the pond, they said, there's no indication at this time that he's here. And so we're like, man, that just, you know, the pond just makes so much sense. They didn't find anything. And we're like, wow, that, you know, it was a little disappointing because the pond, you know, how you just have these gut feelings. It was just, wow, okay. Well, then we get the report from the dive team, but we look at the report, and of course they do quadrants, but each quadrant, except for maybe two, said 60% cleared, zero visibility. And so we sat there and we think, how in the world can this pond be cleared when there's zero visibility? When you're wearing gloves and you don't know if you're touching a rock or if you're touching a bone. And right now we're still focused on that. Lakewood isn't, you know, they cleared it and moved on and just, you know, kind of walked away from that. It's a little frustrating, like Denise and Randy said, that when we review the police report, there's so many instances of missed follow-up, missed opportunities. We just want to bring Eric home. We want to find him. Sometimes we feel like our hands are tied.
Eric's family has found it difficult that his disappearance was never considered a crime.
The thing that kind of bothers us the most is this was looked at as the 25-year-old drunk kid walked off. This is never investigated as a crime.
Denise feels that since they weren't looking at this as a crime, they missed the opportunity on simple things, like attempting to gather surveillance from more than a handful of businesses. Eric's parents are convinced that something happened to him that night, and that the people who were there may know more than they're letting on. But law enforcement disagrees.
It's disappointing as far as the way it's being covered, you know, or handled with Eric being a male. And, you know, it just doesn't seem like there's a lot of seriousness around it, or at least there wasn't at first. You know, again, like the condos weren't searched. We asked them about the cameras and we said, please, on that Monday, please check those cameras. You know, if he walked by, we'll know which direction he went. They never did that till a couple weeks later. And then they were recorded over. Cars weren't searched to see if, you know, Gibby, was he in one of their cars? Again, you know, the condo, they just kind of walked around it. And Pretty said that herself. She told me. I said, what were they doing up there? And she said, oh, they just kind of walked in and looked around. But when we asked the detective, you know, why didn't you search the condo? He said, well, we did. And I said, you went through every drawer, you did every cabinet, every, he goes, yeah, we did. But they didn't, you know. And I said, I told them, I said, Pretty didn't say, she said you didn't. And they said, well, she was just distraught. But we were sitting downstairs waiting for her, and there just wouldn't have been time for them to do that. They were maybe up there 15 minutes at the most, and they all came down. And that's when I asked her, I said, what were they doing up there? And she goes, they just kind of walked around and looked through Eric's bag, and that's it. And even in the report, that's what it says, is that's all they did. Randy had always brought up, if they did do that search, why didn't they find the key to the safe?
Randy's also frustrated with some misinformation that's been going around.
And when we talked to the FBI agent, when he triangulated the phone calls, all the pings were right there in that area. And they tried to tell us that a lot of that is just the general area it is. There's a big foothill right in where they're at. You know, when they talk about they searched woods, there's not woods in that area. You have to go quite a way to get into woods. They're actually like drainage areas, more like a drainage ditch kind of thing. I don't know how we can get that out there to people. That comes up a lot is he lives right by the woods, and it's not woods. It's not a wooded area. It's kind of more open.
Officer Romero told us the police department's stance on this.
We have not found any indication of Eric in any of our searches, unfortunately. You know, at this point, still now, almost 3 years later, there is no indication that a crime has taken place in this disappearance. We have not named a person or anyone as a person of interest in this case. Again, that's just because there's no indication that a crime did take place. And so we've investigated this thoroughly, and there's no indication that anything happened other than he just disappeared. There's zero indication that a crime took place at this point.
Randy and Denise refuse to accept this finding by police. They are adamant that a crime has occurred. So when they speak about the case, they do talk about suspects, because that's what they believe they are looking at. But again, the police have never named anyone a suspect in this case.
We recently talked to a private detective who kind of looked at the case, and he's still going over it. But one of the things that we did discuss was, at the time, it should have been approached as a kind of a crime. And that way, at the beginning, we should have gotten eliminated the four people who were left there at the party. If they would have gone in and started the investigation right away and done a little better job, in my opinion, I think this wouldn't be as bad. I know there's not a lot of evidence, but I don't think a lot of investigation went on at the beginning to collect any evidence at all. They didn't do any forensic search of the condo itself.
Eric's parents were surprised that Preeti didn't call them the next day to see if Eric was there. After all, they had a close relationship. They thought that would be one of the first places that she would check. It's hard to tell if there's more to that or if it could be easily explained. When Eric left on foot, he allegedly told Preeti that he needed to cool off. It's reasonable to assume that Preeti thought he was doing just that. Another thing that came up in the report was that a year prior, when she and Eric were not living together, the two had an argument over the phone, and he said that he needed to cool off for the night and that he would call her the next morning. So maybe she just wasn't overly concerned and thought he would simply return because he had needed to cool off before when they argued. Or maybe she felt embarrassed over the fight and, being a private person, didn't want to bring his parents into the middle, and perhaps that's why she didn't alert them until later in the day when she knew something was seriously wrong. Since we didn't get to talk to Preeti, we can't be certain. During Preeti's interviews with police, she shared that Eric was really into video games, shooting, and working out. But she also opened up about Eric's struggles. She mentioned those tough calls he had been on and how he didn't want to talk about the details with her, but that he would bottle up those emotions and then open up if he was drinking. Preeti went on to say that he never seemed suicidal, although his friend had died by suicide almost a year prior, and he had been very emotional over that loss. She also brought up another thing that happened on July 22nd, in the hours before he disappeared. Eric had had two jobs, one at South Park Ambulance and one with Mountain States Ambulance. On the 22nd, Eric and his partner came upon a car accident on the way to end their shift. They stopped to assist and transported a patient to Denver Medical Center. His boss called Eric and was upset that they had stopped to take a late call at the end of their shift. Eric was angry that he was being reprimanded for providing care. This wasn't the end of the world, though, because Eric was already planning to quit this job. He had gotten a full-time assignment with the other company and had prepared a letter of resignation. He was mad about the phone call and was tempted to quit right then and there, but decided to wait until the following day so that he could collect his belongings from his locker. A few months after Eric's disappearance, Randy and Denise lost contact with Preeti. They had a disagreement over Eric's car. When speaking with the police about this fallout, Preeti stated that she felt blamed and cornered by Eric's parents, and that they felt she had been the one to upset Eric that night. Again, we would have liked to have been able to give Preeti a voice in this episode. We also attempted to contact Caleb, who had been at the get-together that night. We never heard back from him, but from his statements to police, he seemed to be a good friend of Eric's. It doesn't appear that Caleb and Preeti had a close relationship, more like acquaintances. In the reports, the police noted that Caleb's demeanor was appropriate for the situation and that he's been cooperative and helpful. Months after Eric went missing, his mom sent him a message on Snapchat. She didn't expect to hear back from him, but just sending the message was therapeutic for her. She was shocked when she saw that the message had been opened. So she sent another one, and that was opened too. Denise went to the police about this. Could it have been Eric? Could it have been someone with his phone or someone monitoring his account? The police went to Preeti to see if she had been logging into his account and checking for any activity. They were engaged, after all. If anyone would have had his password, they thought it would be her. But she denied having his password or monitoring the account. She stated that she too had sent Eric messages with that little glimmer of hope that he may respond. The officer did some further research into Snapchat and how it works. They learned that you can't be logged into Snapchat on multiple devices. For instance, if someone logged into Eric's account on another device, it would log him off on his phone. Preeti was still paying to keep Eric's phone connected, so the officer contacted Verizon to see if there had been any recent pings on the phone. But there hadn't been. Was Eric logging in on another device and checking his Snapchat, or was someone else? The police obtained a warrant to get more information directly from Snapchat. It appears that they had a hard time understanding the information that was received and were attempting to contact someone who works at Snapchat to explain it. But there's nothing further on this in the file. Another strange thing happened. Someone had logged into Eric's YouTube account and searched for how to turn off the GPS on a cell phone. This search was conducted in October of 2016, several months after Eric had disappeared. Detectives asked those close to Eric if they had done this, but no one admitted to it. They traced the IP to an area of Denver and went there where they found many businesses and a library with free Wi-Fi. By this time, it was May of 2017, and they weren't able to obtain video surveillance from the previous October. It has been nearly 3 years since Eric was last seen, but the police department is still hoping someone will come forward with a clue that will help them solve this.
You know, this is something that, even now, coming up 3 years later, we take Mr. Pratt's disappearance very seriously. It's something that is always on our minds. It's something that we're always asking people for help. And we appreciate the public still being aware of Mr. Pratt's disappearance and letting us know. If they see something, say something. Feel free to call us. We are always taking tips. They can call us at 303-763-6800 and leave us tips. Let us know. It is something that we're always interested in from the public out there. If they have any indication, any clue of where Eric could be or what may have happened to him, please let us know. Our tip line, again, 303-763-6800. Anyone can call that tip line. You will leave a message on that line, and you can absolutely remain anonymous. We are asking anyone to please do not fear that your identity will be known or given away. You can absolutely stay anonymous and help us find Eric. It's just one of those cases where he just disappeared, and you know, we have not given up hope that Eric will be found, and we just ask the public to help keep that faith and to please let us know if you have any sort of information that could lead us to where Eric is.
Eric's family continues to search. They hope that someone might remember something about that night and may have seen Eric.
They live very close to Red Rocks Amphitheater, and there was like a sold-out show there that night. And also right there is Bandimere Speedway, which is during the Mile High Nationals, which is the big event there every year. And so those two things were going on. So we were hoping to get, you know, somebody jog somebody's memory that was out there in that area that night, because there had to be a lot of traffic. Even at midnight, 1 o'clock, you would hope people would still be going home from that, and maybe they saw something. Maybe they saw him walking on the side of the road, you know, something as simple as that. We don't even have a direction of which way to go. We're just, you know, gut feeling, where do you think a guy with no shoes would walk?
Police were given a theory that Eric may have been hit by a truck that night, and in a panic, the driver may have thrown him in the truck and driven to the foothills to be dumped. Denise says that she goes back and forth on what may have happened to Eric.
Those first 2 days, I really thought Eric was in a detox. I just thought, because this is just unreal. And then as the time went, I didn't think he was with us anymore. And now, I mean, there are times sometimes this down the road, I'm thinking maybe he did just walk away. Maybe he just, after everything.
Eric's cousin Laura said that she doesn't believe that there's anyone out there who had problems with Eric and would have wanted to cause him harm.
With Eric, like, he's, you know, he is definitely a people person. And there, as far as like any type of outside influence or any type of outside somebody having any harsh feelings towards him or wanting to do something, I definitely don't see that as a possibility. It definitely kind of leads to it being, if anything, in that direction, accidental and in the moment. Definitely towards Eric, I don't think there'd be any premeditation to hurt him, because he always cared about people. Like, that was the biggest thing with Eric, you know, he'd come up to you and ask you like, hey, what's going on? How are you doing? And for a lot of people, it would be formality. But for him, he truly cared and he truly wanted to know. And that's why he got into the profession that he did, because he does care about people. I don't think there'd be any possibility of somebody wanting to hurt him. So we're trying to get as many answers as we can. And our ultimate goal is, at the end of the day, we want to find Eric, and we're not going to stop until we do. Top priority is to bring him home to, you know, whether that be he walked away from his life, bring him home, know that he's safe, know that he's still here, or find where he's at and put him to rest. And then secondly, you know, obviously, if there was something that did happen, we'd want to pursue justice. But our main priority is we want to bring him home. And that's the hardest part to wrap your brain around. And like, I've tried to continue to take an unbiased standpoint on this and to follow what actual truth that we have and what actual evidence, if you will, that we have. And that's why it's so frustrating, is that there are so many possibilities still out there. There hasn't been one actually 100% proven to where that didn't happen. And that's the hardest point. Like, you know, somebody knows something. There's something out there that can at least allow us to eliminate possibilities and get closer to what happened or where he is.
So what happened to Eric after leaving his home to cool off during the early morning hours of July 23rd, 2016? His family is suspicious of the last three people to see him that night, and it's understandable since there have been no solid clues. But there just isn't any evidence that they harmed Eric. Did he walk off and something else happened to him? Possibly an accident or an animal attack? Could he have been so despondent that he harmed himself and just hasn't been found? We know that several things had happened recently that upset Eric. From the tough calls at work to his boss giving him a hard time for stopping for one last call at the end of his shift, to the fight with his fiance that night. Did Eric walk away from his life? There are some really strange clues, like the Snapchat messages being opened, someone searching his YouTube account for how to turn off the GPS on a cell phone, that last outgoing call on his phone so many hours after he went missing, and the various pings around Lakewood. Eric's disappearance is a baffling mystery. How does this 25-year-old man walk off with no shoes, only his cell phone and wallet, and no trace of him is ever found? It's shocking that they haven't found anything, considering the extensive searches that were conducted. At the time of Eric's disappearance, he was described as being between 5'10" and 6 feet tall, and weighing approximately 170 pounds. He has blonde hair and blue eyes. He had a goatee and several tattoos. If you have any information about Eric's disappearance, please call the Lakewood Police Department at 303-987-7111.
There's not a millisecond that we don't think about him and love him, and we want him to come home one way or another. He deserves to be taken care of, whatever that is. And, you know, I know we touched on this a couple times, but it is heartbreaking that a missing male isn't treated the same. And that would be nice to see to be changed, because Eric wasn't just a 25-year-old drunk that, you know, he was a very responsible man who loved his job and took his life very seriously. So, you know, Eric was incredibly responsible. A week after he went missing, we went up to South Park where he worked and talked with his supervisor. Eric was kind of like a you know, black and white, right and wrong kind of person. And he took things very seriously, but he had such a huge heart.
So, I mean, as far as our plan here, you know, like we're going to start from the beginning again. We're going to continue to search. We're going to continue to ask questions. We're going to continue to go over scenarios, and we won't stop. Not until we find him. I would love to see what they have to say, and I'd want them to get their story out there, because, you know, that just helps us all find answers. And, you know, if there isn't anything malicious there, you know, I hope that they do reach out, that they do say something, and I hope that none of them had anything to do with it. It's possible, but unless they speak up, unless they put their story out there, it's really hard not to point the finger in that direction. Although they could choose not to talk for many other reasons.
One of our biggest mistakes is we didn't use the media like we should have. And that came from Pretty to begin with. She didn't want the story out there. She kept telling us, if he sees this, he's going to be embarrassed and he's not going to want to come back. And so, yeah, at the time we didn't, you know, we're like, yeah, that makes sense, because Eric is kind of a private guy. My wife and I, she got together with Eric the week before. Eric and Pretty took my wife out for her birthday. They went down to the Brown Palace and they did a high tea there. And so she had a really great last time with Eric. And the day before, I paddled with Eric. And so we had a great day on the water. And so our last seeing Eric was, you know, wonderful, and I wouldn't want to change that. We've met some
wonderful people that are still out there looking for their kids, and I wouldn't trade places for the world. We never want anyone to imagine what we went through. I can't even put into words how sorry I am for those people that they're still going through it. That was some closure that we got.
In June of 2019, we brought you the story of Eric Procht, a 25-year-old man missing from Colorado. The stories we got about the evening he disappeared varied widely. As you heard in the original episode, we were never able to speak with Eric's fiancée, Preeti, but did speak with her attorney. We had only the word of Eric's family to go off of, as well as a fairly extensive police file. We left that episode without any concrete theories about what had happened to Eric that night, when he walked off barefoot from the condo that he and Preeti shared. And then, less than a year later, on April 23rd, 2020, a hiker located human remains that were positively identified as Eric. The medical examiner determined that the cause of death was suicide. We had mentioned during the original episode that a handgun was missing from his home, but we weren't sure if it was Eric who had taken it. The outcome was not what anyone expected or wanted. But now that they have answers, Eric's family is on the path to healing. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 291 of The Vanished, an update on Eric's story. We caught up with Eric's dad, Randy, for this update. We asked him to tell us where the family was when we aired the original episode 2 years ago, 3 years after Eric had vanished.
At the three-year mark, it was still like it was the day that he went missing. We still had no idea where he was. We had combed a lot of Green Mountain. We've done a lot of searches, talked the police into doing a pond search. We had a dog team go in. When we were doing one of the searches, we found a pond that was just a little bit west of where their condo is, probably about 2.5 miles. It was, we found out, a pretty deep pond. We ended up getting Colorado Division of Wildlife actually had a drone, and they had just gotten it probably a year ago or so. So they agreed to come up and use that. And so it's like the little submersible submarine, and so it went down, took pictures of the whole pond, and there was nothing in that, even though we had positive hits by three different dogs. That was one of the things that we tried to do. It just really came up with nothing there. We tried to think of different things, try to think outside the box and find if he had killed himself, which is what ended up happening, where would he have gone? And Denise always thought that, you know, he's not far. And so, you know, when we go back and we look at all the logs and the where we did searches, it looks like we did go over that spot pretty closely where he was found. The dog teams actually had cleared Green Mountain. This is the dog team that we used through Lakewood Police. They came close. I was with them on one of the searches that we went across there, and we literally missed him by like 30 feet. And we just kept going back, and it just drove me nuts because we spent so much time out. And Green Mountain was kind of one of those things that I didn't think was possible. More so because Preeti kept telling us, you know, he left here in just socks. And if you've ever been up there, it's not like a mountain. It's more of a foothill. The trails there are, there's a lot of cactus, there's rock, and even a lot of people that were searching. I mean, those first days, people went out in shorts because they didn't know what to expect. They'd never been on one of these. And so we, you know, just ended up scratched and torn and tattered. And so I think in the first days, that's probably why he got missed. You know, when you look back at the time that he went missing in 2016, we had like a string of like 14 days that were above 90 degrees. And so when you look at the area that Eric was found, it was probably about knee-deep grass, but it's surrounded by a lot of little scrub bushes and that kind of stuff. And so the day after they found Eric's remains, we went up there with my brother-in-law, two of my brother-in-laws, and we had one of them had a Bronco jersey on. He laid down where Eric was, and we moved back, and you could literally, like 35 yards away, you could not see him. So it's amazing how we had, you know, people on horseback. We had search and rescue teams that came down and volunteered. We had a flyover by St. Anthony's Fly for Life, and still we missed him. So, but when you look at, you look back at that, some of the searches, and I don't hold any ill will to anyone who showed up to help us. We have nothing but thank yous for them. But sometimes, you know, these are people that we hadn't seen forever. And so you're talking and walking. And at that time, we were all looking for Eric, who was, you know, we weren't looking for a body. We're looking for Eric to be sitting out there somewhere. And I think people get distracted and off trail. And it just, we missed him. And it just, it broke both our hearts, because I probably came 40 to 50 feet from that spot 2 to 3 times, if not more. Especially when we got down there, we're like, how could we have missed him? He could not be on Green Mountain. I mean, just over and over again. And I just still kick myself. How could I have missed him? I was in that area. We had his cousin and one of the other searchers actually were one ravine over the next day. And so it was just weird. His remains were kind of scattered. The most of them were right in one spot, but like his shorts and some legs were far away. So he obviously had been dragged around by some animals. It was pretty hard to take that he had been laying out there for 4.5 years. The hardest part was to imagine what he was going through that night. I mean, the pain that he was in, it still hurts to this day. And I think it happened so fast that he didn't, I don't think he suffered a lot. And I think it was instantaneous, but the pain that he was feeling going up and how alone he was, that always hurts my heart. Denise and I describe it as the happiest crappy news we ever got. I mean, because we went to the Missing Persons Day down at the Capitol that year in January, just before he was found. And so we met a lot of families that, you know, are still looking for kids. They're looking for sisters, wives, you know, that are missing. And one of the couples broke our heart. They were looking for a daughter, and it had been 28 years and still hadn't found him. So it sounds bad. We just felt very fortunate that we were able to get Eric's remains and put him to rest.
Randy told us that he thinks the COVID-19 pandemic is what ultimately led to the discovery of Eric's remains, even though searchers had been all over that area.
Denise and I were actually out the week before and doing just a hike. So we were talking, and I said, you know, this is just going to come like lightning. It's just going to strike one day. This was in the middle of COVID, and so everybody was off work. Everybody's out hiking and walking, and so Green Mountain gets a lot of people out. And the problem with that is they're all on trails, and even from the trail, the trailhead, which is maybe 150 yards maybe from where he was found, and so when you're looking down from the top of that, you still couldn't see him from there. So, yeah, it just took that one guy walking in the right place. And we just thank God for that, because it was just, that was the worst part, is when he was missing, you know, everything was going through our minds. Did somebody kill him? Did he walk away? There were no answers. And so that was hard. Detective Marquez from the Lakewood Police Department called that morning. I had worked the night before, and Denise came into the room and said, Marquez is on the phone, and they think they found Eric. And so we got on the phone with them, and he had told us that they haven't 100% identified him, but he goes, it looks like it. There was a pistol found, and it did end up being his. They also found what was left of his wallet, some ID cards, and it looked like it was all Eric's stuff. And so we went down there, and even the support that we got that day, we probably had 50, 60 people up on the hill across from it with us, and we could watch the police do their investigation. They were picking up the bones and all the evidence in the area, and it did point to, we talked to the coroner, and she did confirm that it was a self-inflicted gunshot wound. And so that's where we're at right now.
Because of the pandemic, Eric's family was not able to hold a memorial service for him until nearly a year after he was found, in March of 2021. Randy told us about the service.
We just had Eric's memorial, and it just was phenomenal, the support that we got. We had people from fire departments, ambulance services. At the end of it, they had a flyover from Flight for Life, which is the medical helicopter, and Eric had worked with St. Anthony's doing some CPR classes and that kind of stuff, helping them out. And so they were more than happy to do it for us. It was pretty touching. We wanted to wait till COVID was over and we could get together with a big group, because we knew there were so many people that wanted to say goodbye to Eric and honor him. And it was our fear during all this was, you know, Eric will be forgotten. And when we showed up that day, it was just amazing. There was 30 some ambulances showed up and fire departments. So it was really touching.
Randy told us about some of the things that he wishes he'd done differently and how this horrible tragedy has affected their family since Eric's remains were found.
Things that I should have done was listen to my wife. She was the one that always said, I think he's up on Green Mountain. She said it over and over again. And I dismissed Green Mountain from day one because of his Mr. Lightfoot. I mean, he didn't go out to take trash out without socks or without shoes. So I don't know how he ended up with socks going out and taking a walk. And that's part of the story that I have a hard time to this day believing. There was a shoe found up there. We don't know if it was Eric's. We have nothing to go by. And it was looked like it had been chewed on by an animal. So why would an animal chew on a shoe unless he was wanting what's inside? That was one of my regrets, is I probably should have spent more time up there. And, you know, just it's hard because we're not prepared for that kind of stuff. I tried to do research to find out, you know, what's the case when most people commit suicide? Do they go far? Do they go near? He had to be pretty close because he didn't take his car. So I didn't think he went that far. But when the Lakewood police called in the psychic and she said her story that he got hit by a car and drove him 15 minutes to the west, I wasted time up there that I should have probably been closer. And during the search, we were out. One of the things that kept me going is when I would come back, Denise would ask me, do you think you could have missed him? And I said, yeah, but it's just me out there. I could have walked right by him, you know, 10 feet away, and I could have missed him. So take the time to go through everything thoroughly. If you can, get help. Get some people out there that need some exercise and just get them out there walking. And I think that probably would have helped if we'd have had more people try to get them in the right places. When we went back and looked at the maps of what we thought was saturated, there was no way to tell if it was saturated because it was just marked off. Yeah, this one got walked, but we didn't know how many people walked that area. Was there a group of six? Was there 20 people? We don't know. So we didn't have any record of that. So, you know, those are things you don't think of until it's all over. But don't ever give up. Keep up with the flyers. Put flyers in the area. Something's bound to spark somebody's memory. Maybe they saw this. Maybe a hiker will find him.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Eric's family is still in shock that they didn't see any warning signs from Eric, that he was experiencing suicidal ideations. Randy told us that he's looked for answers and tried to learn what would have led Eric to take his own life.
Denise and I, when we found out that it was a suicide, not a lot of people believed that that was possible from Eric. Denise and I, in our hearts, always knew it was a possibility. It just wasn't Eric. And so I think a lot of people are still struggling with that. So thank you for having us on the podcast, because I think a lot of people are still struggling with that fact and the problem of suicide with first responders is huge right now. And the hard thing, I think, to understand. And that's why everybody doubted, no, Eric couldn't, he would never do this. And if he would, why didn't he call me? He knows he could talk to me. And so we all go through that. I think everybody in their lifetime has at least thought about it. You know, I think we've all gotten to a point in our life where we're struggling. Maybe some say things more than others. One of the things that kind of helped us through this, my wife worked with a lady, and her husband, when he was in, I believe, college or high school, tried to commit suicide. And so she had talked to him about it and asked her, you know, what were you thinking about your family and what that was going to do to them? And he told her flat out, he goes, you know, I wasn't thinking of anybody else. At that time, all I was thinking about was the pain I was going through at the time. And so when those of us who survived that and are left with the questions, it wasn't about us. It wasn't anything. I mean, we were really close. We did everything together as family. So sometimes it just comes out of the blue. It's just, it's not about us. It's about them and what they're going through at the time. So I think you can't take it personally. You know, when someone commits suicide and that you hear it over and over again, there's always more questions than there is answers. And that's the hardest thing, is we'll never know the truth. what was said that night. We'll never know what was going through Eric's head. Did drinking have something to do with it? Absolutely. Was that everything? No. I think that was only a part of the puzzle. So, and I think that's the hardest thing is friends and coworkers and people around him, they didn't see it coming. We didn't see it coming. We talked to his boss in South Park Ambulance Service. So they are with him for 48-hour shifts, and they didn't see it coming. They felt that Eric was dealing well with the cases that he had. I think one of our problems with Eric is he is a lot like me. He eats his emotions, doesn't deal with them outright, and so it builds up and it bottles up until you get that breaking point. And so is that part of it? Probably. And so in that line of business, you know, in your first responders, those people need to rely on each other and help each other out because you're the ones that see it. You know what they're going through. And I think some of the research that I did, it talks about how, take firemen, for instance, you know, if they're struggling with maybe a call they had or they're struggling with some training or something like that, you know, that's pretty macho. So they don't want to be viewed by their peers as weak. They don't deal with it. They don't bring it those problems out. And I think the same thing with ambulance. I think the same thing with police.
Randy also spoke with Eric's colleagues about what Eric was dealing with at the time of his disappearance in 2016.
I talked with Paul, his boss. You know, we had these conversations about, you know, you guys really need to take care of each other. And he goes, you know, I do. He goes, And Paul's an older gentleman. He's probably in his mid-50s, maybe. And so he goes, I look at these as my kids. And so I really do pay attention to what's going on with them. He goes, I didn't see this with Eric. He was handling situations fine. He goes, he's like the benchmark for a paramedic. He goes, he comes in, does his job. He goes, I've never saw him get flustered or panic. The thing that he really liked about me, he goes, he really contacts well with people. He goes, he really gets it, that part of the medicine. It's not all about medicine sometimes. It's just about holding that patient's hand. He goes, and Eric was that guy. He goes, so for someone to tell me that, yeah, Eric committed suicide, he goes, that's really hard. He goes, because I didn't see it. One of the stories I was reading was about a psychologist, professional in the field. It was either her sister or her mother that had committed suicide. And so you think, okay, here's a professional in the field and they didn't catch it. You know, how am I supposed to catch it? So those of us that are left behind when something like this happens, you know, you can't blame yourself. You're not a trained professional. There might have been some things, unless somebody came out and said, you know, sometimes I just want to end it. You know, that's a pretty good sign, but you know, we didn't hear him say things like that, and no one did. So when it happened, it was confirmed, that was hard. We knew it was possible, but that was hard to take.
Randy told us that he still struggles with all of the questions. How did this happen to our family? What went wrong, and why did he do this? We asked Randy what he's learned from this experience that others with a missing loved one may want to hear.
You hear it 1,000 times in a week. You know, that happens to other people. It doesn't happen to us. And so that's, you know, you think that when we got the call that Eric was missing, we're like, this doesn't happen in real life. This is something you watch on Dateline or you listen to a podcast. This isn't happened to normal people. Well, it does. And happens all the time. And things I would do again is everything we did, keep the story alive. Talk to podcasts, talk to newspaper, your local news. Try to get the story out there as any way you can. It's hard to deal with law enforcement because they're in it for a very short time. If you're lucky enough, you'll have a department that can spend time here and there, and that's the frustrating part. But don't lose your temper with them. They can only do what they can do, but you have to play nice to get them to still do things, but you got to stay on them.
One of the most interesting aspects of Eric's story when we originally shared it was a mysterious Google search conducted in Denver, Colorado, and an IP address that led to a library. We wanted to know what came of that, and this is what Randy told us.
They were looking for the IP address for who Googled how to turn off the phone tracker. And so the IP address was, they tracked downtown, and it was in the vicinity of Denver Health, within a mile of Denver Health. That's where Pretty works, and that's where Caleb works. And so driving around down there, Detective Marquez said that, you know what, I think it was whoever did it, it was done from the Denver library. So Denise called down there and got their hours, and it's like, no, it couldn't. It gives access at this time. That Wi-Fi doesn't go outside of the library because of the thickness of the walls. That's what she talked to the librarian that she had talked to when she called down there. So that was one of those things that we debunked for them. Yeah, Denise actually stumbled upon that. They were going to go back and look at Eric's records. Well, she couldn't get into anything. Like 4 days after Eric went missing, Detective Fike from the FBI did a Google search. He's the one that did the pings. He had actually given Denise Eric's Google password. And so what he wanted to do, he met with Pretty to see if they could turn on the phone locator on his phone. And so Denise was talking to, you know, one of the 20-somethings at work and was telling him, if you have his passwords, you can get to his account. You can go back and look at things and what he was looking at. So they went back and looked, and on YouTube, somebody had Googled how to turn off a phone locator the day after that Pretty met with the FBI. That's why we were trying to run that down, and that's when we came up with tracked the IP address, but it could only get it within like a mile radius of where it was.
It turned out that this lead wasn't helpful in finding Eric in the end, and appears to be nothing more than a red herring. But it was something we kept coming back to when we produced Eric's original story. Eric's family discussed their contentious relationship with Eric's fiancée, Preeti. Though we now know that Preeti was not involved in Eric's death, Eric's family has struggled to make peace with her given the circumstances.
I don't know if you can blame her directly. She's going to have to live with that for the rest of her life. Eventually, we probably will forgive her, but right now it's pretty hard. I don't know what what it would take for her to contact us, tell us what happened that night. I know there was more happened than what she let on. When we had Eric cremated, because it was bones only, and we did get a good portion of him, she wanted to see Eric's remains at the mortuary. Well, they had already been sent out to the crematory, so they weren't there. The mortuary told them no. I don't know if she'll ever have closure because of that. She didn't come to the memorial. I will tell you that we went through a pretty nasty court battle to get his stuff back with her. And so after Eric passed and we got the report, we were meeting with Tim Marquez, the detective, and he mentioned that he had talked to Pretty and that he told her that, you know, it would be a nice gesture I know that the procs want some of Eric's stuff back. And she made the comment back to him that the only way that we're going to get stuff back from him is if they talk to a lawyer. We went to see our lawyer, and so we had to prove in the court of law that we were the rightful heirs. She was not at that point. She's just a former girlfriend. We were the executors of the estate at that point. We did get the majority of Eric's stuff back. She did keep a lot of stuff.
Despite the horrific loss of Eric and the tension with Preeti, Eric's family is trying to heal and move forward. Randy told us that the holidays and significant family events always reopen the wounds, and that's tough for their family. He also shared with us some parting words that he wants the parents and supporters of others with missing loved ones to hear.
That's probably the hardest time is holidays, when you're going to a wedding or getting together with family, is even though we have Marcus and his family, I look at the people around us and I just think, you know, what we're going to miss out on in Eric's life, you know, the wedding, helping him plan that, kids down the road, just vacations we would have taken with him. So when you get together at holidays, that's probably the hardest thing, to see family with their whole family, their kids and everything. And, you know, their lives are, they're happy. And it's still, I've read books about the mourning period and everybody mourns different. There's no right or wrong. But when people say, you know, that was 5 years ago, you should be over it by now. You know, we may never be over it. And people have to understand that. That's a part of our lives that we lost and we'll never get back. And so people who are missing a child or a loved one, really be careful around them when you say something like that, because that really stings. Don't give up hope. And whatever you do, keep your family close. I know this can tear families apart, but Marcus is doing good. We have Marcus, his wife, Jerrica, and their sons, Isaiah and Roman, our grandsons. They're all doing pretty good. Roman, after the memorial, came over and took this giant poster-sized picture of his uncle and hang it on his wall. I think Marcus is doing good. I think he has his good days and bad days, like all of us. I think some of the cousins have guilt here and there. And I think when they think of a party that night, they should have been there and things would have been different. And I don't think they would have. I think Eric lived on the other side of town, so I think they would have shown up to the party. They would have left, and everything happened after everybody left. The arguments started after that. So, but I still think, you know, they feel guilty over that, and they shouldn't. We've talked to them, and I think a lot of them are doing better after the memorial, kind of not putting it behind us, but starting to heal a little bit and move forward. So I think we're all there. Denise is probably taking it the worst. I can tell that she's lost joy in her life, and she'll ask, will I ever get that back? And I don't know what to tell her. You know, that's probably the hardest thing.
In the end, what happened to Eric was every parent's worst nightmare. And his family is left with questions they will likely never know the answers to. What was Eric feeling that night when he walked away? What was the catalyst? The survivors left behind spend the rest of their lives questioning where things went wrong. And suicide leaves behind deep scars in those who wish they had been able to do anything different. If you or a loved one is considering self-harm, please call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. They're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to help. Their number is 1-800-273-8255.
We went through this, you know, did the body get moved? There's no way that he was up there. We walked by him. But it just, the way his body was there and bones were scattered. So there's a lot of wildlife up there, anywhere from mountain lions across there. There's coyotes, there's bears. So it appeared to be what she reported. I really don't think that there was any foul play. The only thing I can say is the day before, him and I went kayaking, and he was in a good mood. Everything was good. And even Pretty, the night of the party, said he was having a good time. So whatever happened, he was drinking, but he was texting with one of his friends lives down in New Mexico, and seemed like he was having a good time. He was talking about one of the recent calls that he had. In the first podcast, we talked about the little kid who hung himself on Eric's birthday, and that did affect him because he was still talking about it with his friend, but it had to be more than that. I think it was a spur-of-the-moment thing. I think it was kind of the perfect storm. He had had enough to drink that, you know, maybe he didn't care as much, wasn't thinking clear-headed, because he didn't try to get a hold of anyone. There was no last words. There was no nothing. And so it was I think that had a lot to do with it, and with whatever they were arguing about that night was the fuse that got lit. And for those parents and people who have somebody missing, not just every day, but every minute of every day, is you're thinking, what happened? Where are they? Where can they be? And it's just probably the worst feeling ever. And it was like a big weight off our shoulders when they actually found Eric's remains. And I don't know how to explain that to people and how to not come off like, yay, we finally. But it was a relief to us that we found him. And even with his being the self-inflicted gunshot wound, I would have rather it been his decision than somebody else's. And I don't know if people can understand that or not, but it would have killed me that somebody else had a hand in doing that.
That brings us to the end of episode 291. I'd like to thank Randy for coming back and speaking to us for this update. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be covering a case from Washington. Thanks for listening.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.